For the past 55 years, Coronation Street has been among Britain's most watched television programmes, offering a glimpse into the lives of a host of classic characters, brought to life by the talents of actors such as Jean Alexander, Pat Phoenix, Alison King, and Sarah Harding.
And if you love watching Corrie just as much as we do, then you need Conversation Street. And if you give us a minute of your time, we shall tell you for why.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael, and welcome to episode 188, where we'll be discussing the BAFTA-worthy episodes of Coronation Street broadcast in the UK between the 22nd and 26th of February.
Here at Conversation Street, we love all the characters, and we just can't stop talking about their latest adventures. The thrilling suspense of Carla and Tracy's feud.
The heartache when Izzy has missold oregano.
And my personal pick of the week, the ever-wonderful Leanne's bid for the bistro. What was your favourite bit, Michael? Michael?
Oh, sorry, I was just doing a bit of research for our latest feature discussion. As you know, here at Conversation Street, we take the accuracy of our information very seriously, whether it's getting it from books,
Corriepedia,
or even harassing the actors on Twitter.
But don't just take our word for it. What do you have to say, Coronation Street producer Stuart Blackburn?
I've been producer at Coronation Street for nigh on 3 years, and I tip my hat to the folk at Conversation Street for their wonderful weekly podcast. Every week I download the latest episodes onto my phone in anticipation of their mix of witty banter, thoughtful analysis, and constructive criticism of my work.
Opinions.
Puns.
Theme music.
There's nothing Conversation Street doesn't have. We've recorded a podcast every weekend since 2012. After all, what better way is there to spend a Friday night?
Oh, by the way, we've just got a text from Rachel and Omar inviting us over for dinner next Friday. Can we go?
No. Honestly. Conversation Street. It's right up your street.
Hello everyone, it's episode 188. You already know what dates we're talking about because of our lovely introduction. Hope you liked it.
That was a parody.
It's a parody.
Of something that was already a bit of a parody.
Yeah,
of an
Sally's.
Election video. Sally's amazing election video.
We're going to do a shorter episode today because we're both a bit sick. You can't hear
I'm really sick,
can't hear my voice because I'm not a drama queen.
But, I'm dying of laryngitis or something.
Horrible things wrong with us. So let's do Corrie history. It's been 95 years since the birth of Harry Hewitt.
Yep.
I don't know who that is.
It's a person. 45 years there was a protest outside of the Mark Britton warehouse because nobody wanted a warehouse on Coronation Street.
40 years since the first appearance of Derek Woolton.
Oh, Derek. 25 years since Vera Duckworth was told by Joss Shackleton that he's her father, and I think that's where the whole thing about her being related to
the Queen
and everything came out. Maybe not that episode, but like a little bit further
surely
down.
Surely we're all related to the Queen.
In some way.
Isn't everyone in Europe related to Charlemagne somehow?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
We're all related to Vera Duckworth.
I
was going to say, special birthday this week as well, isn't it?
Jean Alexander, happy 90th.
You got a name check in our introduction video.
Yeah, you did.
Still going strong, still possible for you to return back to Coronation
Street. That's right,
Street.
Because as of now, as of this moment, you're not dead yet.
No, and that's anyone goes.
And if you're still alive, they could still have you on.
Yeah, exactly.
They haven't quite got the technology to bring you back from the dead just for a special episode.
No, but they could have like a special hologram projection of Jean Alexander or Hilda Ogden, couldn't they? I mean,
they could
do that with Michael Jackson and things, don't they? They're probably just waiting for Jean Alexander to die so that she won't protest it.
Yeah, that's
and then
true,
have her
actually.
Walking down the street.
I'm gonna start a celebrity Hollywood death conspiracy website where I claim that any celebrity that dies is only because they want to make a hologram of him. Poor Robin Williams. Anyway.
Well, that's what they've been happening so much recently. If it happens to David Bowie, then we'll know we're onto something.
Yeah. Right, let's move on to Street Talk. Street Talk time. Oh, there were so many things happened this week. We've got 7 different storylines.
Yeah, some of them are only small.
Yeah, some of them are just like, and then they mentioned this. Mm. So the first one was the Battle for the Bistro. Leanne, Robert, Carla.
They all want Nick. The piece of the bistro.
It's such a great, well, I mean, I would want a plate, a piece of it too, considering everybody
eats there every night.
I think Freshco's is stupid to open up around the corner a new a new shop because no one's going to get buy any food there.
Yeah, I don't think anyone actually knows how to cook on Coronation Street. They go out every day, don't
everyone
they?
Everyone goes to the cafe for their breakfast or their lunch, don't they? And then they go to the bistro for dinner. Maybe and they go, oh, it's a treat. It's not a treat if you have it every day. That's what fat people say on My £600 Life. I'm only having a pizza just for today. Tomorrow is KFC.
I think they should have a £600 person on Coronation Street to highlight the issue of
eating too many garnishes at the bistro. Yeah. Like, they add up, you know.
I wonder whether any act, which that's like a test of which Coronation Street actor really, really wants or sort of appreciates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna put up
to £600 just for their art.
Mm.
Well, I reckon through all
none
of this,
none of the women. I'm gonna guess.
Well, maybe not. I reckon at the end of all this, Nick's going to end up with a bistro anyway. I don't think that...
I think so too.
He might end up selling it to somebody and then getting it back or something, but I reckon 6 months down the line, Nick's still going to be in charge of it.
Although, I did tell you, didn't I, that my idea... Who was it? Wanted to change it? Robert wanted to change the name? I wouldn't have changed the name. I just would have turned it into NB.
NB? Oh, because you like the sound of that?
No, because it means important point.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll just change it to NB and then...
Well, if Leanne...
But then it would end up like, you know, like when you say PIN number, it'd be like NB Bistro, when the B actually stands for Bistro, so you're saying N Bistro Bistro.
Well, if they call it, if Leanne gets it, then they can't call it LB, because then that just makes you think that you'll be piling on the pounds by going there.
Yeah, but then she can turn it into like one of those heart attack grill places where it's... Have you heard of this place?
No.
If they weigh you, and if you're over £300 or something, you eat for free.
That sounds like something they'd have in America, is that?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
So we're going to be starting off with that storyline, then we'll go on to the high roller. Although she did say today that this week that she wasn't getting high, didn't she?
Well, whatever, Izzy. Whatever you need to tell yourself to sleep at night.
We said that we wondered how she would be taking this cannabis, didn't we? And we said that we didn't think she would be smoking it, but it sounds like
she is.
But they haven't shown her to anything.
Of course, they would never show such a thing on Coronation Street.
It makes me wonder whether after this week, that's kind of the end of the cannabis part of it anyway, because Gary knows about it now, and I think the drama came from the fact that she was sneaking around going after
it. No, he's going to be... I think he's now going to be the one that gets the drugs, and he's going to get himself in a fight.
Well, he could do, couldn't he?
I think that... I couldn't think of it. As soon as he started saying that, I thought, oh, well, obviously, he's going to go off and score the drugs now.
Yeah, but he didn't like the idea of her being around Jake.
Can we just
move
on?
Yes, okay, right. Yeah.
Standing for council, still continuing.
Yeah, and feeling refreshed. Yeah. Still going. Now, this next storyline is all about Rana and Zidane. And Rana is the new nurse on Coronation Street, and she's a little bit sexy. So we're calling this storyline, Hello Nice!
Oh.
Which is a cat call.
Where did you get that from?
It's from vaudeville, and they used to have
it. What's that?
It's like a kind of stage kind of thing.
I know what vaudeville is, but I thought you were talking about a TV show called vaudeville.
No. They used to have it where it was like a cat call when a scantily clad lady dressed up as a sexy nurse walked on stage, and then all the men would turn around and go, Hello, nurse. And also they used it in Animaniacs as well.
Did you look this up on Wikipedia?
I did, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you don't know anything about
this,
do you?
I'm not usually that knowledgeable. No. That's what it is.
You didn't know that before, then?
I did know that it was on Animaniacs, and then I wondered where they got it from.
Okay. Right, and then we've got A Slave to Fashion and Tinkerbell.
Yeah, a little bit of those at the end, haven't we?
Yeah.
So, the battle for the bistro first. Not Battle of the Bitches anymore. It still could be, wouldn't it? Because Leanne's involved. Well, and actually, Leanne did say that Carla was her bitch. No, Tracy said that Carla was her bitch this week as well, didn't we?
So horrible.
Battle of Tracy's Bitches. So, they're talking about selling up to Robert at the beginning of the week. But also, Nick wants to talk it through with Leanne first. He hasn't told Leanne at this point of the week, has he, Nick?
Well...
No, he hasn't.
I don't know what you're reading, where you're reading this from, but...
I'm reading right there.
they're talking about, Nick and Chloe are talking about selling, and Robert hears them, and Steph gets annoyed because it's her 21st birthday and she's worried about her job. And also Andy, that same episode, is supposed to have booked them both a day off and he forgot to do it, and then he buys her a kettle for her present. It's, and he's like,
the classic Corey fake out though, isn't it?
Well, at the end we find out that
She's going to a spa.
She's going to a spa.
I think probably a few people were surprised that Steph was only 21.
I know.
I read a few people online saying that they thought she was a bit older. Not that she necessarily looks older, but because she's like, well, so mature and sophisticated.
As far as I'm concerned, once you get over the age of about 18, you sort of become this nebulous age where you can't really like, well, they're in their 20s or they're in their late 20s or maybe their 30s. I don't know.
Well, Steph's journey into 20-hood is only just beginning now, isn't it?
Wow, imagine having that in front of you. What a lucky girl she is. With all this new technology.
I know.
Getting her in trouble. Anyway, Tracy comes in and she finds out that Nick's selling up. And she goes, wow, how surprising, and looks Carla straight in the eye.
There's a few scenes of that this week, isn't it? Like, staring at Carla.
So Carla goes into the into the factory and has her fake family that she's moving, and she would like them to buy her out so that it can stay in the family name.
Mm-hmm.
But if she wants if they want her to, she'll just stay a silent partner.
Yeah.
And Kate's like, oh, we've lost you already. We've only just met you.
Tell you what, Gemma, this is almost as if all these extra Connors were brought in just to take over the factory.
It's a load of crap.
I mean, what on earth would happen if Carla was leaving and the Connors hadn't all shown up on the doorstep?
Well, Tracy would probably be trying to buy that as well.
Yeah, maybe, actually.
So Johnny says to Carla, oh, please, can you stay? And she's like, no, I don't think so.
I want to go and have an ice cream in Devon, please.
Yeah.
So John Tracy's telling Robert, right, this is your chance now. You gotta grab it.
Yeah, because although she set this plan in motion, it's not exactly 100% that it's going to fall as she wants it to. She's got to convince people to do what she wants them to do.
Well, she's quite good at being manipulative, isn't she?
Yeah. So, in the pub, Michelle accidentally lets it slip to Gail that Carla and Nick are leaving, and Gail didn't know.
For a split second when that scene was on, I thought, why does Gail care? Because I think, Michelle kind of says about Carla going, and then I thought, why does Gail care about Carla? Because I'd forgotten.
Well,
so
you know,
stupid of me.
It's like one of these things where they say, if everyone's special, no one's special. And I would like to translate that to Coronation Street and say, if everyone's related, then no one's related.
Well,
it's all the same.
Everyone's
isn't it?
Slept with everyone at some point. There's one degree of separation between everyone,
pretty much. Yeah. So Gail then confronts them and says, when were you going to tell me? And Nick's like, oh, get over it, Mum. I've still got brain damage. I'm still a bit of a bastard.
Well, this is what Gail says. Oh, what if you have a relapse or anything? Who's going to look after you? I mean, Nick did spend a fair amount of time living away from Weatherfield in his youth, didn't he? He was over in Canada for a few years in Italy and stuff.
I think he's a grown-up, Gail.
I know, Gail's like...
But I think I would be sad.
If you kind of...
Well, think about it like this. She's used to having all her family around her, so she probably...
Well, she got Sarah Lou back now, though, hasn't she?
Yeah.
So it's just like doing a bit of a swap.
Swapsies.
It's obviously clear to us now who Gail's favourite child is.
Oh, it's always been little Nicky, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's always been Nick. So Robert says to Nick, please can I have first refusal on this? And Nick says, well, I'm going to have to ask Leanne first. And Robert says, no, I would...
He's like, no, it needs to be me. I'm already part owner in this place. How much is this worth? And Nick says, well, it's £100,000.
And Robert's like, yeah, man, I've got £100,000, no problem. And then he makes a face like, oh, I'm broke.
We got a bit confused by this, didn't we? Because
I didn't get confused.
No, the fact that it's £100,000, but is it £100,000 for Robert and also £100,000 for Leanne?
Well, this is what they forgot to address, and
either
I think
that
the script writers forgot, because Nick says his shares are worth 100, right? So I can't be bothered to do the maths on this, but Robert's got 20%, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Everyone's forgotten that he's got 20%, because his offer to get the whole of the bistro should actually be less than anyone else's, because he's already got a percentage.
Or is it the fact that Nick Nick's shares are worth £100,000. So if Robert pays £100,000, then he's got the whole 100%. But if Leanne at the end of the week pays £100,000 or whatever, she's just buying Nick's shares. So Robert still
owns
got
a bit.
20%
of course
of
he does.
Oh yeah, I didn't. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
How
that makes sense now.
Business. No, but what I'm saying is, why doesn't Robert say, "Look, Nick, I've got 20% of these already"?
Because the 20% isn't included in that
100,000. No, I know, but he should say, "You sell to me because I've already got 20% of the shares."
I thought he did say that. I don't know now. Maybe
why
what
are you so confused?
What Tracy should do in this case then is tell Robert that you should threaten to back out of the bistro if Leanne goes through and buys
it.
And then Leanne wouldn't be able to cough up the money for the extra 20%.
Yeah, and then Nick, because Nick keeps going, "Oh, I want all this money so we can move."
Mm.
And so he wouldn't be able to move because... It would scar up his choice, the decision, because then he'd have to take a chunk of his money and put it back into the bistro, and he wouldn't really be able to cut ties with it.
Mm, yeah. Although Robert probably wouldn't actually want to leave the bistro completely.
Well, he's convinced that he's a hotshot chef and all the success of the bistro is down to him. So if I was him, I wouldn't be too concerned about it, really, because he can be a chef anywhere he wants.
He'd be headhunted, couldn't he? Yeah, that's true.
Well, he already was headhunted.
Mm. Anyway, Nick is...
Because Nick didn't find out that was secretly Tracy.
No, that's true. So, Nick's telling Gail everything's going to be fine. And then Leanne comes in and Nick breaks the news to her about selling up. Also about the fact that Robert is asking for first refusal.
Now, meanwhile, Robert's looking for this £100,000 online, trying to find a company to loan him it. And Tracy says to Ken, "Look, we've got 90k, but can you give us the 10k, even if it means dipping into Amy's funds, and just think it's an investment in Amy's future."
Mm.
Ken's like, "Oh, I don't know, start a new business, don't most of them fail, what if you split up?" And no, I'm not going to give it to you. So
I'm not surprised at Ken, because I don't think that Robert and Tracy's relationship really is that secure. And even, and we know that Robert's been unfaithful, but even from somebody else looking from the outside, I don't think that Tracy and Robert appear to be that strong a couple.
Are we to believe that Deirdre had life insurance that equaled over £200,000?
I don't know about this. It does seem like there's an awful lot of money that's been left. I don't remember. It might have even been mentioned after she died, but there's a lot... Yeah, I mean...
Because he... This is a spoiler for what we're going to talk about in a minute... But he ends up giving Leanne some money, and she needs a lot more than £10,000, doesn't she? Because she doesn't have anything.
She probably doesn't get anything. So Ken must leave. Yeah, her the. Well, she gets a loan for some of it, doesn't she?
Yeah. So we're talking at least £50,000.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Each grandchild plus all the probate and the funeral and.
Oh yeah, we know all about that.
So. Blimey, she was minted. He should have knocked her off earlier.
I don't really know why Deirdre was minted, though. I mean, she worked at the medical centre and worked at the council.
Life insurance. She wasn't super young that she's like, "Oh yeah, well, we'll give you a load of money because she would have earned this much extra in her life." Was she even? Did she even have a job?
I can't even remember what her job was by the time she left.
She
marrow stuffer. I got no idea, but anyway, the figures don't appear to add up, but I mean...
Never does.
Who are we to speculate on characters' finances?
Well, I mean, if Ken's so great and he lives in a little... what's it called?
Little terrace house.
He's probably been saving up all his money for the past 25 years.
That is true, actually.
No idea what to do with it now. He doesn't wear kimonos.
So anyway, Robert, at the end of the episode, offers Nick the £90,000, but he has turned down for now. And I don't know whether it was supposed to be a bit of a joke where Nick says, "I'm literally all ears," or whether it was just an unfortunate coincidence.
He must know. They must know.
So what happened on Wednesday then? So,
well, Carla tries to encourage Nick to accept this offer, and Nick goes, "Well, isn't it weird that you suddenly want Robert in charge, but earlier you hated his guts?" And she says, "I just want a quick sale so we can go." And he says, "No, I'm not going to accept the first offer anyway." Which I think's right, because he only just put it on the market.
Yeah, it was like that very day.
The same day, he gets an offer for less than he wanted. Surely, plain business would dictate that you wait at least a couple of weeks to get your full offer before you start entertaining people for less money.
Well, they're in no hurry anyway, are they? Because they're not going to get married until May, and they're going to be hanging around until then. Carla obviously just wants it to be done and dusted as soon as possible.
Because of Tracy's threats.
Yeah, but with Nick, he could leave it going for a month or so.
Now, Tracy is trying to reassure Robert that it's all going to be fun, and she says to him, oh, I know, because I'm a little bit witchy, which I thought was quite funny. It's quite funny how Tracy and Amy are kind of building this mythology about themselves, that they've got psychic powers to mask their manipulation.
That's true.
Leanne and Robert are talking about how he's going to own his own place, and she says it's a shame he can't afford it. And she looks all thoughtful.
No, she says it's a shame she can't afford it, I think.
No, I think they're just... I don't think it matters. She just said, no, it's a shame. And I thought at this point she was going to go in with him. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't end up doing that, coming to some kind of agreement. Because there's absolutely no reason why they couldn't both be... Because she's really good at managing it. She's much better than Nick.
Yeah.
He's good at doing the backup, you know...
I don't really know what he does, because it...
Who?
Nick. Because it does pretty much seem that Leanne, whenever we've seen it, and it's not just this week when they were trying to make a big deal of how useless he is, but Leanne is generally the one that's seen to be doing things, isn't she? Nick is just looking permanently confused behind the bar most of the time.
Yeah, well, I would say, if I was Leanne, I would be like, look, you don't want to be bogged down with all this stupid payroll nonsense and all the day-to-day stuff. Let me do that. You do your kitchen stuff. We'll go 50-50. You put an extra 30, you know, you put 30% in. I'll put 50% in.
They could have ended up doing that without even having to borrow money from Ken, possibly, couldn't they? Robert could have got a loan, Leanne got a loan.
Yeah.
And they could have had 50-50 or Leanne or 60-40 or something like that.
And that would have
right up Tracy's nose.
Somebody's going to have the... the majority share, aren't they?
Yeah, so
give somebody 2% like Ken
or Simon or whatever. Yeah,
well, no, it needs to be somebody that can make a decision if they're deadlocked and they want to do. That's what I'm talking about. If one of them says I want to do this and the other one says I want to do that, then they are stuck. Unless
I wouldn't trust Simon to be making a decision.
Well, no,
no, but if there was a decision and then Leanne, would have to get a decision from Simon, he'd be was it worth?
Okay. So, Carla's trying to convince Nick to sell to Robert because of how convenient it is. And he says, well, yeah, right, if I don't get any more offers by the end of the week, I'll just accept his. And then in the street, Carla's trying to sort of put a bit of bravado onto Tracy. And she's saying, oh, you've done me a favour to get out of it. And Tracy says, oh, well, you're my bitch now.
And she totally is at the moment. She shouldn't be. That's not what Carla's like.
No.
But that's what she has completely become at the moment. Carla's just been pathetic.
I'm sure they're doing this. I'm sure they're doing this because at some point Carla's going to turn the tables on Tracy.
I really, really hope they do. And it's got to be a spectacular table
really,
turning.
The way they've done it, the way they've built this up, it's got to be the best comeback story in the history of mankind.
Because
even better than that time that Jesus came back at Easter.
If all that happens is that Carla kind of goes off with her tail between her legs to Devon or...
wherever.
Or even if she kind of ends up with a smirk and... because there's something small that's happened. I know, it's just not...
It just
won't
feels,
feel worth all no, of I this know. Pain and misery that Carla's had to go through.
Yep. So on Friday, Nick is stressing out and he... like we said, he's demonstrating his uselessness because he's on the phone and he can't seem to quite get that you need to be polite to people who want to book a meal with you. And so Leanne takes the phone off him and does a great job and upsells them and everything. And Nick says, oh, I wish it was you that was buying the bistro.
See, I don't know what you think about this, but I quite liked Leanne in this episode, and I think I do quite like Leanne when she's not being kind of downtrodden and being the victim of this and that, or romantic victim, or victim of abuse, or whatever. And this was a bit of a old Leanne spark,
I think,
I thought.
In general, both of us don't like victims because we don't like Anna a lot of the time.
No.
She is a massive victim.
Yeah, and Izzy as well.
Yeah. But, we like people that fight for themselves.
Yes, I mean, this could be, I don't know what you think, like a bit of a turning point for Leanne. And if she comes out in charge of the bistro, it could work wonders for her character.
Well, if there's one thing you know about me, it's that I'm very changeable in my temperaments and opinions on things. I'm fully prepared to change my mind.
Blimey, watch this space.
It could be the shock of the century, where 2016 is the year I hated Carla and loved Leanne, and who would ever guess that? No one.
Yeah, oh, that'd be good.
Anyway, Tracy is got great ideas about how she's gonna put a display of flowers at the bistro every week, all day, or whatever. With a little sign saying about where they came from, which I thought was a good business idea.
It is. I mean, and this could be something that makes more likely that Tracy will end up getting the bistro, because, you know, they like to show off Interflora at all moments on the show.
Yeah.
Like when Chesney brought Sinead his massive Interflora flowers. They were lovely. It's turning into the Visa contactless, isn't it? Like,
boop. How convenient.
They're making a bit too much of that
I think. I think it's all right.
It's just like the labels are always angled towards the camera that winds me up. It kind of takes me out of it a bit.
Oh.
Coronation Street is usually so realistic. And I know it's just a big advertisement for Visa and Interflora.
Exactly.
And Nationwide, of course. I don't think so.
I think
they've finished with them, yeah.
Right, so... Leanne goes over to Ken's and she says, oh, I tried to get a loan for the bistro, but it was no good. I had great plans and it would help get me money for Simon. Oh, wow. What can you do, eh, Ken? Kenny's whose wife just died and has probably got a load of cash.
So she's obviously got no faith in Simon becoming a professional footballer or anything in the future.
Tackle people and break their legs. Although, actually, I'm sure a few clubs would like to hire him just to... end a few careers.
Or he could be a professional boxer or something, couldn't he?
Well,
Oyster at the moment. Now he's tied down to a bistro.
He hasn't found his calling in life. Anyway, Ken's looking for thoughtful, and then he goes to the flower shop and he says to Tracy, oh, are you opening the bistro for anyone other than yourself? And she's like, oh, I'm going to go shopping. And can you imagine everyone's faces? Ha, ha, ha. Tracy, I can't wait to rub their noses in it.
She even says like, oh, Amy doesn't need it. She's already got she's all right with Deirdre's money.
Well, she is right. How many children have that much money, especially from somewhere like that? I never had any money when I was a kid. You didn't?
No, definitely not. But
50k.
Yeah,
that's a bloody great big deposit on a house.
Yeah. My grandma died about the same when I was about the same age as Amy, and I think I was left like £3,000 or £4,000 or something. So
poverty-stricken.
Well, I think a lot of that money ended up going towards our wedding in one way or the other, or the house or something. It's worth it in the end.
Yeah, it's my money now. Right, so Ken goes back to see Leanne and says, I've got the right to invest Simon's inheritance if I think it will benefit him, so I want to give it to you to invest in the bistro. And Leanne's like, ooh, I don't know. And then she says, oh, it's Simon's money. What if it falls through? And Ken says, it will be fine. But that I can't give you the full amount. You're gonna have to ask the bank for the rest of it.
I thought this was a good twist in the story, and I was just looking forward to Tracy's face when she found out, because Ken, it's not the first time that he sided against Tracy.
He is a little Judas, that man.
And now Deirdre's gone, he can do it even more.
Yeah, I know she does deserve it, but wouldn't it make you bitter? No wonder she's so horrible.
Yeah.
It would make you bitter in the end if your parents screwing you over.
Yeah.
So Nick's getting a bit sad because it's the end of an era, and Carl's like, oh, we're not going anywhere. Yeah, why don't you put it in the paperwork that you stay in control until we move away? And then he goes, oh, that's a good idea. And then he goes and tells Robert they accept his offer.
He went over and accepted the offer without saying, by the way, I'm still going to be in charge, didn't he?
I thought that was really weird. I feel like somebody was there in Corey going, oh, We should make it so that make sure that Nick's still in charge, because people will be confused otherwise. But I really honestly thought that it's obvious that he would stay in charge until the wedding, because that's just how the show works.
I didn't. I thought he might take a bit of a back seat or even just leave completely, help out the factory or something. I don't know. But yeah, it didn't.
Well, it just seemed really clumsy. I thought it was just like, we must tell the viewers.
But obviously it hadn't been assumed that amongst the characters, otherwise they wouldn't have said it, which is just why I thought it was weird that he went and accepted his offer before actually telling Robert, by the way, I'm still the boss. But anyway.
Anyway, Leanne goes and tells Ken, oh, I think I'm going to go for it.
I promise.
Can we just point out here that Leanne's got a terrible form for looking after a business? Right, so she goes to the bistro to tell Nick, but it's too late. He says, I've already had an offer. And he says, well, I'll consider it. I'll consider them both. And he goes to the bar and tells everybody. And Nick and Robert look really worried. And Tracy's outraged. And Leanne's like, oh, I'm smug.
She is completely smug there. That was pretty bad form on Nick, wasn't it? She didn't even offer him more. She offered the same amount as Robert had. And
really, what he should have done is said to Leanne, look, private, like, between you and me, he's offered me the same. You offer me an extra £5.
Yeah.
Then he gone out and said,
I've got a better offer.
What is it? It's confidential. I can't tell you, but I'm accepting that and not yours.
Yeah, they should have done that. Really should have done. Because although it all depends on, that would assume that Nick does want Leanne to be in charge more than Robert.
Well, he told her that. He told her that earlier in the week. At the beginning of the episode, when she was taking a... He literally said that.
Okay, I forgot.
Wait, he says...
Leanne is...
Nick tells her he wishes she was buying the bistro.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I remember now. Yeah.
So, Tracy can't believe this and starts belittling Leanne and stuff. And Ken's there as well and says, shut up, it's Simon's inheritance. And Tracy's like, what? You told me you wouldn't give me the money. And Ken says, look, Simon deserves it and you would only spend the money on yourself. And Tracy goes, well, what do you think about this, Carla?
And Carla's like,
oh, I don't know, I've got a bad arm.
Yeah.
So Tracy goes off with Robert and says, look, we're going to have to find this money somehow. And she starts to run a scheme and plot and talk about Leanne and Carla and stuff. And says, Robert says, look, this doesn't help. The way you are with Leanne and Carla, it's no wonder people screw us over. Let it go, it's over.
Why couldn't Tracy have just gone back to Nick and offered him an extra £5, though?
Well, you think she would have done. But she knows she's got Carla in a vice, so she's not going to bother herself with Carla's lackey.
I suppose so. She doesn't even want to pay an extra £5 if she can get it off of Carla. No,
she'd rather Carla just gave it to her. So Tracy says, look, into Robert in the kitchen. She says, look, don't you think I'm sad here? No, I'm the one that's the victim. And Robert's like, no, I'm the one that's lost out here. This is my business. You've already got a business. This was going to be my, you know, I was going to be the head chef and owner. And she says, look, if you really want this place, I will get it for you. I mean, for us.
I wondered what she meant. All this talk of Leanne has made me realise there are other ways that ladies can get money.
Yeah.
But there she goes and asks Carla for it.
Well, Nick says to Leanne, look, I'm going to have to decide this tomorrow, okay?
Yes.
So we have to wait.
Yeah, so Tracy goes off to Carla and asks for the £10,000 to give to Robert. And Carla's like, no. And anyway, Nick would rather sell to Leanne anyway. And Tracy's like, I don't care. I just want the money off you. You got 24 hours. And I did think it was a bit of a letdown. It was a bit of an anticlimax that she gave a 24-hour deadline for this on a Friday episode. Because shouldn't she have just said, well, you got until Monday.
Or yeah, I'll give you over
the weekend to decide. Because it's like...
Monday's nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen on Saturday or Sunday, and I'm sure that Monday's episode will be set on Monday. But anyway. It adds the tension to the scene, I suppose.
Yeah.
We also found out in those little scenes that Jamie's been given 3 years in prison, hasn't he? So that's the end of that story.
Well, it won't be 3 years because he gets time off for good behaviour or whatever, and everyone's like, oh, he should have had more.
The 3 years was just for the revenge porn thing though, wasn't it? They said it might get a little bit more for the Robin the Bistro thing. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure that's the last we'll hear of them.
That's the last
and,
of
and
that.
Steph won't have any more trauma or worrying that people are looking at her online or anything like that.
Really, he should pay a massive fine to Steph. Don't you think? Like damaging her reputation and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what the usual
America,
sentence for this kind of thing is.
Him for that.
Yeah, what would Judge Judy tell him to do?
She'd be like, get out of my courtroom. That was my amazing...
It's almost like she's here in the room.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say this to you, but I am actually Judge Judy and I do earn $900,000 a day, but I've decided not to spend it on anything.
I always suspected. You're very judgmental of me.
I am. I would be brilliant at that job.
You would.
I'd be like, don't even open your mouths. I'm looking at your face. I know you're a girly. Get out. Right.
Wouldn't make much of a TV show, though, would it?
No, wouldn't, no. Right, so, hi, Roller. So, on Wednesday, Izzy...
She's in pain again.
I don't know what she's doing.
She's...
Oh, she invites... She's feeling fine, actually, on Wednesday, because she's still got her stash. And so she says to Anna, oh, come to my house for tea. And she's looking through her bag and she can't find...
Yeah, I thought she couldn't find her stash. I thought she was looking
around. Well, she's obviously... No, because she invites people around her house for tea, Michael.
Oh, okay.
If she's got a problem, she's not going to be inviting people around for her house to eat, is she?
No.
At that point, she was fine.
Okay, I couldn't remember. You're right.
I am right.
We have. I don't think we'd seen Izzy's house before this week, had we? I didn't recognise that set.
No, I don't remember.
I can't remember where exactly she's supposed to be living. It's like around the corner or something.
She goes to the corner shop and she says to Erica, I need some more drugs. And Erica says, oh, the person who gives me it's gone to Spain, so you need to ask somebody else. And Erica says, go to the Blue Ghost to get some, but it's a bit rough. I'll go with you tomorrow if you like. And Izzy says, I can't wait, I need to go now. And Erica's all a bit worried.
It's weird that they've created this Blue Ghost pub when the Dog and Gun probably would have done just as well.
I think it would be a bit too stupid if they had.
I would have thought that it would just cement its reputation as the kind of the dodgy pub of the area.
It makes it more real if there's more than one dodgy pub, Michael. I hate to tell you this.
There really that many dodgy pubs around?
There really are.
We might have had a chance to see old Gemma and Macca again if she gone.
It would have been too silly. She comes into the pub and she's like, hello, can I have drugs? And the person's like, yeah, sure, you go.
Gives her a little bag.
Goes back home, opens it, and it's oregano. But it's fine because everyone's come over to eat spaghetti bolognese anyway, and I always like to add oregano to mine.
She the look on her face when she realises, like, she has a little smell of it, doesn't she, in the bag, and then she gets her jar and has a smell and is like, oh!
Oh, no!
Honestly, walk right into that one.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, rolled right into me. That one. So Gary notices that she's in pain, but she's like, no, I'm fine. Then they leave, and she cries.
My pain, it hurts so badly.
No. You got to try at least to pretend to be sympathetic.
This all kind of comes from when Marta knocked her over the other week, doesn't she? Although she does say to Gary later in the week that it gets worse year on year, which is pretty rough, really, isn't it?
Yes,
I do feel sorry for her, but she's just a bit of a...
A wet blanket.
Yeah. I wonder how much more Erica's going to have to do with this storyline, because I thought that it's like, oh, there's a new thing for Erica to do, but it looks like she's only been there to put the idea into Izzy's head, and now it's going to be her and Gary or whatever.
On Friday, Izzy leaves Jake at the gym and she phones in sick to the factory because she's in pain so much, and Gary finds out and tells Anna and they're wondering what's going on. And she still hasn't shown up at work later and she's not at home and nobody knows where she is. But we know, because she's at the Blue Ghost. And she starts shouting at the drug dealer that gave her oregano. Does she not understand that surely if he gave her oregano the first time, he's probably not the guy to ask?
I want to know why he had the oregano in his pocket anyway. Does he always just have like...
He's obviously ready to scam people. Yeah, but I agree with you.
Oregano in one pocket, cannabis in the other pocket, and hope he doesn't get them mixed around. Or leave them in there when he... puts them in the wash.
But don't you just carry oregano around with you? I do, just in case I have pizza and it doesn't have any on the top.
No, basil is my herb of choice.
Oh, okay.
he's just like, no. Go away, you stupid woman. We're really making fun of her, innit?
Yeah, they weren't, but they didn't give a crap that she was in a wheelchair.
Well, she's hardly the most threatening of customers,
is she?
She was
crying.
Compared to what he's used to, probably.
She cries to him and says, I want it for pain relief. Like, I'm not a druggie, I don't want it to get high, I just want it for pain relief. And he's like, I don't care. And she says, right, give me the money back or give me the drugs or I'm going to phone the police. And he just takes the phone off her and chucks it on the floor. And then she's snivelling and saying, oh, I phoned my boyfriend. And he's like, get out.
I feel really bad, but I was kind of laughing at Izzy in this scene as well. And I obviously, like I say, I feel bad for the condition that the actress is in and everything. But the fact that how snivelly and whiny and pathetic she was.
Really, Izzy.
When he threw the phone on the floor, I was like, and then she was crawling around on the floor, wasn't she? Terrible, terrible.
So he gets distracted by a bar fight and she goes outside and she's trying to phone Gary to get rescued, but he can't see it because the gym's
got
an
open day
and he's not looking at his phone. Which is what happens every time I've tried to contact anybody, they never have their phone on them. And I think, why do you not know your phone is mobile? It's in the name, mobile phone. You can take it with you. You can put it in a pocket.
What was most surprising to me about this was that Gary seemed to have a really, really old mobile phone. It was like a... Almost like one of those old Nokias from 10 years ago, wasn't it?
No, I can imagine him.
He hasn't entered the smartphone dimension.
Like, oh, what do I need that for? He probably doesn't even have an email address.
Everyone
it's probably Gazza Bazza and not 69.
Everyone else seems to have a Windows phone on Coronation Street. Loads of
is
people
it product placement?
I think it's Microsoft's last ditch attempt to get anybody to buy a Windows phone. Anyway, he finds out eventually.
Well, Erica goes around and says, "Oh, I want you to find Izzy." And Gary says, "Well, she's not here." And Erica goes, "Well, there's a sensitive thing I want to talk to you about." And he rushes off when he sees his phone. And I think Erica is still going to be involved in this because...
Yeah, I forgot that she was in that little bit, actually. Yeah.
So Izzy's hiding...
Round by the bins.
Gary turns up and takes her home. She's crying and he's like, "What are you doing here?" And she says, "Oh, I was there for weed." And Gary's like, "Huh?"
She's learnt the street talk for it already, hasn't she?
Yeah. So she says, a friend got it for me last time. And Gary's disgusted.
Well, the fact that she's looking after their child together.
No, but he's just generally, he can't believe, he's like, "You're disgusting." And he's just badgering her. And then eventually she explodes and says, he says, "Oh, look, I know it's not easy for you." And she's like, "Look, you don't know what you're talking about. You've got no idea what I have to live through. Every day I struggle to get out of bed because of the pain. And every year it gets worse and my pain gets worse. And I've proved everyone wrong. I've had kids. I've got a job. And I don't want to admit that I'm struggling because everyone will know. Everyone will think I'm lying. And then they'll swoop in. The social workers will come and take my kid away. And I can't have that."
But surely Gary would know all of this because he used to be her boyfriend and they lived together for a long time.
But the thing is, though, you forget, because her point is, I act like I put a brave face on and I go out and I do what everyone else does. But I don't. Everyone else doesn't have to deal with all this pain that I've got to deal with, and it's easy to forget.
Well, she didn't really put a brave face on, does she?
And he says, "Look, you're going the right way if you want the kids taken away. If you're going around taking drugs." And she says, "I don't want to smoke it. I have to. It helps me do stuff. I'm not getting high." And I think it's quite funny how she's so puritanical. It's like, it's okay if I don't enjoy it. Like Victorian ladies having sex.
But that she probably would get high, though, wouldn't she? I don't know how much you have to have of it.
I don't know how she would know what kind of dose she needs. I would imagine she spent the weekend completely off her rocker and before
she might
worked
be
out,
mightn't she? Do you think
before she worked out how you, yeah, you've got to take, and then
it's like when you're doing a recipe and you're like, how much do I need to put
you
in?
You don't
this?
Know.
I imagine, or I might look on. You spent the weekend trawling the internet to try
Gemma,
and find her.
How much salt do I put in the spaghetti?
It says a pinch, Gemma. How much do I need for that? How many crystals?
So, and also, if she gets a different type, won't it be you have a different strength and different ones have got different amounts of...
That's true. I suppose there's no definite rule for it.
Well, that's why they have medical grade stuff, because it's from a certain variety and they know...
Yeah, that when people have it for medicinal purposes, do they get high or do they just get prescribed just the right amount?
I don't think anyone really cares if they get high.
Yeah, but I just wonder whether they do, because all I know really about it is what I saw in that South Park episode, and I don't think that's really a
perfect example
of what happens. But like you say, I bet she probably did.
So Gary's
like, I'd like to have seen that scene.
Just there again.
if they'd have kept this storyline up until later in the year when they have the 9 o'clock episodes of Britain's Got Talent, they could so show Izzy getting high.
Maybe they can have her and Gary like giggling together and eating brownies. Anyway, Gary's still trying to think of a solution. He says, "Well, look, take proper medicine. Why don't you go back to the doctors and ask them?" And she's like, "I've done that. Everything they've got either makes me into a zombie or I start hallucinating or... don't you think I've tried that?"
Tell you what, it seems to work quite well for Carla, though, doesn't it? Because as soon as Carla's medicine's taken...
What are you talking about?
As soon as Carla has her pain medicine taken away, she becomes even more of a snivelling
wreck. It's completely different.
I know. Just making links.
I feel very sorry for the situation that Izzy's in, but I said before, I've got no sympathy for people that...
No, you don't, do you? You don't have sympathy for people
who
are really ill and have got sore throats and stings.
I've got a sore throat and you don't get me going, dear, make you hurt me.
No, but you're supposed to be nice to me.
No, shut up. Listen, Gary says to her, "Stop worrying, I'm going to help you." And to me that means, stop worrying, on Monday there will be a scene where I get beaten up at the pub.
But I still don't think that he would agree to the idea. Maybe he'll help her out with that if one of the conditions is that Jake goes to live with him for a bit. Because he wouldn't let her do that with Jake in the house.
Why can't he just say, I'll look after Jake while you sort yourself out?
Yeah,
or maybe. Anna. I mean, there's loads of people around. There's Anna, there's Faye, there's... And all those other people, they can all help.
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, they're not gonna find out the reason why they're being so helpful for, are they?
But the stupid thing is, she's there going, oh, well, you know, I need it because it helps me. She says, oh, it helps me put the washing on and get Jake's tea ready and stuff. If she can do that, she can look after a kid.
I don't think Gary would be able to be convinced of that.
I think it's really funny how they're like, make sure that they write into the script that she doesn't do it around children.
No.
Otherwise, we're not allowed to do it at all.
I wonder whether this is going to sort of cross into the Sally storyline at all, and she'll find the drugs and then obviously be...
I hope not, because I don't see where that would go. It would just get too messy, because she's the counsellor, has got no authority or ability to legalise marijuana in leather.
Yeah, but Sally probably doesn't know that. She probably thinks that she's got the power of to create her own laws and everything. Although at the moment she's obviously only against knife crime and parking and what's the other one? Got to remember from her video.
No, I didn't.
The drugs weren't even there.
Drugs weren't even. Oh, littering.
Oh yeah, littering. Scourge littering. Of Weatherfield.
What? Right. Speaking of Sally, let's move on to her now. And on Monday she's feeling very discouraged, and maybe she should give up. And Tim says, "Don't worry, I'll vote for you, and I'll give streetcars a go. But just so you know, I'm not going to give up my window cleaning."
Yeah, this is after Norris has had a go. He decided that he wants to stand as well, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He has.
You can. The Coronation Street put this little thing on Twitter yesterday that you could add a little Sally or Norris badge to your Twitter profile picture, depending on which one you would vote for.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Who would you vote for? I think.
I'd vote for...
Isn't it like being forced to pick between Hitler and Stalin?
As a viewer, I'd rather that Sally won.
Yeah. I don't like Norris.
No. I would probably go for Sally.
But then I think, yeah, Sally is a lot more easy to manipulate at the moment than Norris is. Because she doesn't know what it is that she wants.
Well, and that's what this week's stories are about, isn't it?
Yeah, so Aline and Michael are not happy because Tim goes into the streetcars and he's like, oh, get on with it. I'm just, you know, I'm your boss, but I'm just going to sit here in this skanky chair and read a paper, just like Lloyd. And then he starts saying, oh, I want a biscuit, I want a special type of biscuit. And Aileen gets annoyed and stalks out and says, do the invoices, learn how to use the switchboard.
Sally has a bit of a confrontation with Rita in the episode as well, saying, you betrayed me. And that Norris says...
Norris is like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't even know what DEFRA is. And she's like, No, of course I do. And then...
Then she said, I don't know what it is. What is it?
Don't know. So but
we're not standing for council, so it's fine.
Doesn't matter. So Tim's having trouble with his customers because he's not been able to get around to sort their windows out.
Yeah, all of his dirty widows that he has to sort out. And Norris just spends the rest of the episode winding up Sally at the bar. And Rita wants to have a ceasefire, but it doesn't really seem to work very well, does it? Now, we also had Liz asking Tim how he's been getting on with running streetcars. Obviously, she's got this vested interest in it because it's Steve's business, and she's like, have you sorted out the roaches and everything? And he smiles that, yeah, of course I have, everything's fine. He obviously hasn't, although she doesn't know that. She doesn't believe it. No, nothing really came out of that, did it? I thought that there'd be more repercussions of, like, nobody...
It will all pile up soon enough.
Maybe if it's, like, sorting out the roaches for next week, then these upcoming
episodes will have to fall out. There'll be chaos. So on Wednesday, Sally's lies start to unravel because she sees Jason, who is excited about this new Fresh Goes development because he thinks he's going to get to build it. And she says, oh, I'm all for job creation. And then her and Tim like high five each other because they think they've won Jason's vote. And then in the cafe, everyone is worried about the Fresh Goes because they think there's going to be a cafe in there.
Yeah.
And Sally goes, oh, I'm against it.
I'm for small businesses, isn't it?
Yeah. So in the pub then, it gets revealed that Sally's told different people different things, and she gets asked what her true position is. And then Norris starts gloating and says, if you sit on the fence too long, you'll get splinters.
I thought that was a nice little... although we didn't see much of the storyline, I thought that was quite a funny way for it to go. I still don't know how much further they can take it, particularly. I can't remember when these elections are supposed to be now.
Well, they're supposed to be really soon. Because they were like, oh, I don't know if there's enough time for a campaign.
Yeah, they were, weren't they? They're almost running out of jokes and things that they can do with it, aren't they? Maybe. I'm still completely enjoying it, but I wonder, is it just going to keep going round in circles a little bit now until the election and it turns out that nobody wins?
Mm-hmm. So, feeling refreshed. On Monday, Anna's getting heckled by Eileen for wrecking Phelan's van, because I can't remember if it's Phelan's or Jason's, but anyway, she trashes the van, didn't she?
Yeah.
And then Phelan takes the van to Kevin and says...
yeah, so it was Phelan's van.
Can you fix this for me? And Kev says he'll do it for free. And Luke's like, oh, Anna's not his girlfriend anymore anyway.
Yeah, Kevin's doing it because he feels bad that his kind of his ex-girlfriend was responsible for it. And Kevin's a stand-up citizen, isn't he?
And Tim comes over and goes, I can't believe you've dumped her over what Phelan says. I know Anna well enough to know that if she's this mad at someone, they must have done something. Don't you think so? And Kevin says, no, I can't be dealing with this. And Tim's like, oh, I trust Anna over Phelan any day. This guy's new. You've known Anna for years. And this guy just comes sauntering in. Suddenly you don't takes his side over Anna. So he's got a really good point. I'm glad Tim came in and said this.
Yeah, he has.
Brought Kevin back.
Kevin's not very trusting. I mean, he was obviously burnt last year by Jenny, but...
That's true. So Phelan goes into the cafe and he is just simply there to antagonise Anna. And she gets her all flustered, and then the last customer leaves. Kind of
sits there staring at her, doesn't he?
When the last customer leaves and it's empty, Phelan locks the door and turns around and it's like, oh, what's he going to do now? And he says to Anna, I want a public apology tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the pub. And she says, no, I'm not going to. And he says, oh, you think I'm scared of you? And she goes, no, I'm not scared of you. And then he gets mad and he pushes her against the wall and he's like telling her, you've got to do what I say. And then in comes Kevin and he's like, what's happening?
What happened? Because did he not lock up the door? Did he just put the
clothes sign
over?
Yeah. So
rookie mistake.
Phelan's demeanour suddenly changes and he's like,
oh, hello Kev, I just came round to bury the hatchet.
I just came to bury the hatchet, but as usual, Anna wasn't having any of it. And Anna's like, oh, he burst in and demanded an apology. And Kevin says, get out.
He still kind of does believe Phelan at this point, I think. But he orders him out just to diffuse the situation a little bit. And Phelan actually almost loses it for a second, doesn't he? He's like, why do you believe in air, not me? And then he's like, okay.
I'll go, whatever.
Kind of cordially leaves, doesn't he? And Anna's left very shaken here. So Phelan immediately goes out into the street and sees Jason.
Starts peddling his lies.
Yeah, so he can get him on his side. Says, yeah, I was trying to apologise and everything. And even Kevin believes her now. Jason, of course, sides with Phelan. You can say he's being stupid, but there's no reason why Jason shouldn't be believing Phelan at this point, is there?
I have to admit, I'm very gullible. People tell me something, I believe what they say.
Yeah, well, Phelan's been hanging around with Eileen and stuff, and he's just been nice as pie to them so far.
Yeah, and then just as you think Kevin and Anna have sorted out their differences, it veers into irritating Soapland territory, because Kevin tries to get to the bottom of what happened, and she won't tell him, and then he says, I'm really sorry, I should have believed you, I want to make up with you, and she says, no. I had to put up with Anna not supporting me. I'm not going through it with you. Sorry, Kev. Too little, too late.
Yeah, that is annoying. Soapland,
isn't it? Kevin goes up to Eileen, Michael, Jason and Phelan in the pub and tells Eileen, you've got to watch yourself around Phelan. He had Anna pinned up against the wall earlier. And Phelan's like, oh, no, Kevin never saw that. I wouldn't do that. Beating up women is not my style.
Yeah, and everyone rallies around Phelan at this point as well.
Except
don't they? Apart from Michael, who's like, interesting. So Michael could be part of Phelan's downfall, possibly.
Well, maybe this to is... Do for I just keep thinking this is how he's going to end up back with Gail.
Yeah,
this has got to be
the storyline.
Is it
going to...
The thing is, didn't he... What was that thing that he was annoyed at? Eileen took that bracelet, didn't she? And Michael didn't like that. And then Now they've kind of like allied themselves with this kind with of the villain. Robin. And then is it going to come out that time that Eileen stole money off of?
Yeah.
I mean, if it comes out all of that, and he's going to think you're not the woman I thought you
Michael
were.
Michael is an upstanding citizen who'd never do anything to break the law.
He never would do anything like that.
No, and they had that thing in the gym this week as well, didn't they? With Gail and Michael, and they kind of.
She sees him and he's signing up for classes because he's worried about his heart. And she's like, oh, Michael, should you be doing that?
Yeah, so it's slowly getting there.
Slowly getting Hooray. There. Right, so Phelan goes to the garage to get his van back, and which Kevin obviously said he would fix. But Kevin hasn't done it. And he says, you're in my bad books now. And Kevin gives him evil smirks when Kev says, I will find out what happened between you and Anna. And he says, keep divin', Kevin. Keep digging, Kevin, but be careful. You never know what you might find.
It was something like that, wasn't it? Yeah. I thought that was great, isn't he? Doing his little digging action. He's still, like, thinks he's on top and nothing can shake him.
But as is the tradition with Phelan, he does not appear in any other episodes except
Mondays. Back to the Monday. Last week he was in them all, but yeah, so...
So he says on Wednesday, Tim comes to see Kevin and says, I can't stop thinking about Anna, and Tim tries to get them to make up together, but it doesn't work.
Nothing else happened there this week because they needed the screen time for Carla and Tracy, didn't they?
Of course.
And also Rana, who was in it a little bit more this end of the week. Hello, yes. Nice. Well, she's got a job by the end of the week.
Well, nothing Zidane just fancies her, and that's really it, isn't it?
Zidane kind of fancies her, and he's given her the eye, and she's given him the eye, and
he makes them dinner.
Makes them posh sardines on toast.
She goes for an interview, and then on Wednesday, Yasmin talks about how great she is, and Alia's talking about how Rana's flirting with her brother, and then on Friday, Rana's flirting again, saying she's looking for a flat in the area, and she can't find anything, and then she gets the job, and they celebrate, and Zidane tries to act all cool, but he obviously is really excited as well, and I wonder whether Rana's going to lead Zidane astray. I wonder how long she's in it for, because at the moment my idea for her, how they're going to handle her, is to have her come in, take Zidane's innocence, and then bugger off again.
Yeah, left heartbroken. We could do with something to provide a bit of sympathy for Zidane, couldn't we? Because we're not his biggest fans. But yeah, I think it seems like it's going to go that way. Although she does seem like kind of a nice person at the moment, doesn't she? She's not being evil or...
She is being a bit overly flirtatious and man-eatery, and I don't think that, like, traditionally women who are depicted like that are not supposed to be sympathetic. Like, if a man's a bit of a womaniser, it's just like, oh, you know, oh, he just likes his ladies. Whereas if a woman's like that, she's a bit of a skank.
That's a bit like when Steph came into it, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's been replaced by Flaggy Rana.
Yeah, she has.
Well, I'm still kind of enjoying this storyline, actually. And in fact, as much as I kind of slag the actress, well, not the actress, sorry, the character off, the Izzy storyline I'm quite enjoying as well, just because it's a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like we haven't had a proper Izzy storyline for a while, and... It's kind of doing something a little bit new for Coronation Street, so I'm quite enjoying that.
So, Slave to Fashion, our second to last storyline today. Beth, again, is missing money from her purse. She thinks it's been stolen, but no, she just put it in a different pocket.
Don't blame Jenny, because Jenny's disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yep. So, over comes O'Driscoll to the factory, and he wants them to make a load more stuff. He's invested a load of money in this production, and he wants them to make it all. And he wants to know later on whether Aidan's going to do it or not. Aidan goes to the girls and says, oh, the O'Driscoll is going to keep us in work for at least a year.
Unfortunately,
he's bitten off more than he can chew, because I don't think they're going to be able to make anything other than O'Driscoll stuff.
No, but I tell you what, if the O'Driscolls have got some kind of dark secret or anything like that, and this whole deal falls through, then what's going to happen to Underworld? They won't have any work, because he already had to delay another customer, didn't he? So he's kind of... getting himself a bad reputation with everyone else.
I was reading something about small businesses the other day, and it was saying something to do with if you're ever in a position where a customer offers to supply more than 50% of your business, always turn them down, because you should never rely on one other company. You should always diversify as much as possible. So this is a bit of a rookie error on Aidan's part. And Johnny tries to explain to him that he's making empty promises and gambling with customers. And Aiden's like, no, no, you just trust me. You should trust me.
Hmm.
I don't know why he thinks that anyone should trust him. He's not got a proven business record.
Oh, no, I don't think he has.
I know that Johnny's kind of depicted as a bit of a, you know, like a wide boy kind of ducking and diving.
He knows what he's talking about.
He does have experience in the business world, and business never changes because it's people.
Aiden still doesn't really like Johnny though, does he? So he's obviously just going against everything that Johnny says.
Well, he's convinced he's right, because on the face of it, he's got them work for a year with this company that seems to be going places, and on paper it all looks really good. But in reality, anyone would tell you this is a bad idea if you're a small business, because you don't want to rely on one other person.
Put all your eggs in one basket.
That's literally what he's doing.
And put all your knickers in one
drawer.
Yeah. So talking of dark secrets, Marta skulks back into the show towards the end of Friday's episode, and I was very happy to see her again because we liked how that was starting, and then she disappeared off for a few weeks, didn't she? But she's gone back to the factory for some reason. I don't know whether they explained really why she went
where
back
she
there.
Went.
Why she didn't? I don't think. No, they didn't say where she'd been. I don't know why she went back there as well.
Well,
because
I can only imagine she's been on the streets living rough, and she didn't have anywhere to go because she's sick, isn't she?
Mm.
So she knew that she could have shelter and warmth and food, even if she might get caught. I think she's just so desperate because she's sick.
Yeah, it's one of the only places she knows.
So Eva and Johnny are chatting, and she spies Marta skulking around and goes, oh, Johnny, I've got to go. She goes and brings Marta to the flat, and she is sweating and she's ill and she can barely open her eyes.
She looked a lot younger on Friday's episode
she
than
so
she
vulnerable.
Had done before. Because how old did she say she was before? 16 or something? And we didn't think she looked that, or I didn't think she looked like that, but on Friday's episode,
she did look a bit younger. So Leanne comes in and is like, who the hell is this? And he says, oh, it's my friend, she's got to stay the night. And Leanne says, oh, all right, one night only. Does he even pay rent here?
I guess so.
Wouldn't you be
I
like,
don't know.
She looks, she's my mate. She's ill. And Eva says, Leanne buggers off after she's been a horrible cow. And Eva says to Marta, look, you look really sick. I'll get you a doctor if you need one. And Marta's like, no doctor, no police.
I hope we find out a lot more about her next week. It looks like we're going to kind of have to now, unless she does a midnight flit from Eva's sofa.
Because on the face of it, maybe Eva doesn't realise, because everything in with the NHS is so seamless that you wouldn't, like, you need a doctor, you phone them up. You need an ambulance, you phone them up. Nobody comes and goes, let me look at your passport, where's your NHS card? Who are you? You never worry about it. No one ever asks you.
Don't they? I don't know.
Well, no, they don't. Especially if you're phoning up your local doctor, because they know exactly who you are.
I suppose that any doctor would have the old Hippocratic Oath that they'd have to...
Yeah, but they're not going to... The thing is, if you're not from this country, you're supposed to be charged for all emergency care and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So if they know that she's not English
or
British, they'll say to her, where are you from? What's your name? And it'll all come out. So Marta knows,
Martin knows
the score, and Eva doesn't understand that. Because what I'm saying is, from our point,
like,
you
us,
just proved that. You just proved my point
anything.
By saying, oh, don't you?
I'm on the same level of intelligence as Eva. Yes, you have just proved that. Well done.
Because when you give out your name and stuff at the hospital, they just look you up.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, okay. I think that Eva should have told Leanne, surprise, we got a new sister. We're in a soap and that can happen. Look at me.
She doesn't have blonde hair, though.
That doesn't matter. Leanne's isn't blonde originally, is it? It's all fake. Right.
It's not real.
And we finished off the week with another blonde, Tinker Bell, who went to do a granny knitwear modelling on Friday, didn't she? And it's just basically more chance for Chez to be angsty about it.
Here's my prediction. They have all they said is knitwear. I'm going to predict it's some kind of knitwear that wouldn't
kinky
be acceptable
knitwear
to Chesney. Because he thinks it's all twin sets and turtlenecks, but who knows what could be knitted pants.
Yeah, thermals. They need that up in Scotland, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so he's... things aren't made any better when, was it Rana or somebody says, oh, you're dating a supermodel now, oh, watch out.
They're
obviously just having a bit of a joke with him, but because this is what he's been
fearing. He's worried about himself.
Yeah, so anyway, Sinead comes back and she promises that she's doing it for their future, and it's just a laugh. So the storyline didn't go any further this week, did it? It was just more modelling and more angst from Chesney. And that was it for this week's Coronation Street. So I thought it wasn't too bad this week, and as much as I've moaned about the Tracy and Carla feud, it did actually turn a bit of a corner this week, didn't it? And it was more about, it's more about Leanne than Carla and Tracy in a way, wasn't it? Carla was in the background for a bit of it. So I kind of enjoyed that a little bit more. The apart from the very end of the week, there weren't any more kind of stupid demands from Tracy to Carla, and so I might give Leanne my character of the week.
I thought you were going to do that.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah. No, I thought she's done good, and she's thinking about her boy's future, and she did actually bring him back from Portsmouth. Only missed one day of school this week, rather than just leaving him there for another few weeks. And it wasn't an inset day or anything, because Amy went off to school. So yeah, Leanne, you've done good this week. Well done, girl. What about you?
I struggle with this. I'm gonna pick a feeling. Because he was like, his mask slipped a bit, and I enjoyed him kind of taunting Kevin.
Yeah, he was good. Always enjoy watching Phelan. Yes. Well done, you two. Yep. Right, now we're not going to have we had a really interesting feature discussion lined up for this week, didn't we? But you'll have to wait another week for it, because my voice is not going.
We can't do another hour of this.
Yeah, but we have got some news and feedback, so let's go on and do the cabin now.
Welcome to The Cabin, which is our news section, and our first bit of news is Sally's campaign video has been made live on the internet.
Yeah, it's kind of news, isn't it? It's certainly worth talking about. It was on a Monday night after the episode, I think. They put it up there, and it's made quite a bit of an internet sensation, hasn't it? There's been lots of other news sites like Digital Spy and a lot of the newspapers kind of linking to it and saying these are our favourite parts of it, and well done, Coronation Street, for producing a viral video, kind of. It was it was filmed as if it was, yeah, Sally's campaign video. I don't know who was supposed to have been behind the camera or anything, but it was just an amazing fake kind of funny video that's obviously been filmed in a way to make Sally look like she can't act or anything, and it's just got all the kind of the cliches of,
like, turning awkwardly to face a new camera angle in the middle of a speech.
Yeah, and kind of pausing.
Oh, I didn't see you there.
Yeah, it was just really, really funny, and surprisingly so. I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise, because everything to do with this storyline so far has been hilarious.
I'll tell you why it was surprisingly funny. It's because whenever they've done videos like this in the past, they've just fallen slightly short of being completely funny. And when something doesn't quite hit the mark, especially with comedy, it just becomes really cringy.
Yeah, a lot of the online series. And with those, they'll like build them up and say, oh, starting soon, we've got Lloyd and Steve or Kirk's sort of online mini-series. And with this, it just kind of came out of nowhere and blew all the other ones away. It was absolutely hilarious.
I like the bit where she goes, and I shall tell you for why.
I think my favourite, I've got a few favourite parts. I like the bit where she's listing off those things that she's going to stand up against. And she's like turning to face the camera each time with like serious face on, littering and parking. And parking, it's like she can't even be consistent, because like she's got littering as like a little mini thing that, okay, then maybe that's what she can deal with. And parking is like, well, it's not parking that's the problem, it's the fact that there's a lack of parking. And then she jumps straight to knife crime, as if it is like, well, better put something serious in there. Yeah, as if it's rife, when actually the last person to be stabbed in Weatherfield was Brian Tilsley. and none of these things she says how she's going to deal with them either. It's just like a little bit of grit can go a long way.
Exactly.
So I like that bit, and I like the bit where
I like the bit where she looks at her campaign poster and sort of goes, hmm.
I don't even remember that bit. I like the bit where she's where she's serving the dinner up to Sophie and Tim. And the line about, my daughter's a committed Christian and lesbian, or the whatever around it. It's like, you knew that line was going to come in.
You knew that. As soon as she saw Sophie, you knew.
Here comes the lesbian and Christian line. And it's like, it is getting a bit old, but it had to be done, doesn't it? And the fake smiles that they're putting on. And then and when Sally says, oh, who's going to help me do the washing up? And Tim kind of points to Sophie, and Sally's just like, oh, honestly. And she's there tossing the salad there, kind of smiling and shaking her head to the camera. It was hilarious. Where she's talking about, she kind of insinuates that she's owning the factory as well, doesn't she, at the beginning of it?
Yeah. Running a successful business.
Or working out in the gym. It was, and then there was the bit at the beginning with the sandwich as well, the brown bread. Yeah. Delicious and nutritious. Every single scene of it was amazing. Gold. They could have almost done with not having the Kevin bit at the end.
I thought that went a bit OTT because she says, like in real life, Sally would have hushed up the fact that they got divorced because he had an affair because it makes her look weak.
Yeah. But for the purposes of comedy, of let's make a funny online video, entertain Coronation Street viewers, then...
If you haven't seen it, go and see it, because it really, was really hilarious. And
if you haven't seen it, then you can imagine what it's like by listening to the beginning of our episode today.
Yeah, we took a leaf out of Sally's book and decided to do a campaign intro. So, also, Sally has been interviewed in today's Sunday Mirror.
Sally the actress, not Sally the character.
Sally Desmond Tutu.
Yes.
Yeah, and she said that, the headline was Coronation Street Sally, whatever her name is.
Sally Denever.
Denever admits she could leave the soap after 30 years, but actually no.
It was a bit of a sensational headline there,
yeah,
wasn't
she
it?
Just said, after 30 years at Coronation Street, I do get itchy feet, but who knows what would happen if I left. I don't want to risk leaving something that I'm enjoying. I went to see Julie Hesmandhalg in a new play recently. It was absolutely brilliant, and it did make me think, oh, should I do this? Should I leave? But then another part of me thought, what if I left and it didn't work out? And I love it here. At the moment, I think I'm enjoying it more than I've ever. And there's no better job, really.
She shouldn't leave.
Absolutely not.
If she did leave at the moment, it'd be rising the high of her being written as a really funny half of a double act, wouldn't it? And
yeah.
I'm not saying that she wouldn't go on to the same heights as Sarah Lancashire and Saran... Jones or whatever, but it is so risky, and maybe she would be happy to be on the stage, because I mean that's what Chris Gascoigne and Julie Hess is doing and that stuff at the moment, isn't it? But I always think it's a bit of a come down, especially if you're going from a really popular, successful
but it's not to actors,
soap
though.
Character.
If
no,
you're
it's
a proper
not.
Actor, I think a soap is like the lowest common denominator. It's like
it used to be. I don't know whether it's such a
no, but it's like if you're a composer, do you want to compose music for an advert, or do you want to compose it for, you know, listening in the
Symphony Hall?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I really hope.
If you
she
think
doesn't...
of it as an art form,
yeah.
Acting. I mean. Not to disparage it, because obviously we think it's brilliant, and I have argued before on the show that it's an unappreciated modern art form, but it's not well, you know, it's not well regarded, is it?
No, she really would do well not to leave and keep.
Well, we're saying that selfishly, because at the moment Sally's one of our favourite characters, and every week I'm like, oh, don't know whether to say Sally again is my character of the week, but I really liked her.
It's not because she's a great actress. She is a good actress, but we're not enjoying her because of the acting or the drama, are we? It's just the comedy, and it's how she's the lines she's being given and how she's delivering them as well. But
it's a perfect storm of great delivery, which is acting, Michael. Great character development over 30 years.
Yeah.
And having the right writers and the right characters to bounce off of, and the right situation.
Yeah, it's a good happy mix. Like,
yeah,
at the same time.
I mean, it's not going to last forever, because it can't do, but while it's happening, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, but we said before that they're turning them into a bit of a modern Ogdens, and they were able to keep stringing comedy along for a long time together, so I'll be very happy if this carried on for a long time. Dipping in and out.
Yeah. Also, in her interview, she talks about she's worried about being a bit too old for drama and.
Yeah, that's the thing. Actually, she said watching some of the old things, and she liked to cry and everything. She didn't think she'd be up to that anymore.
She said that she feels a bit embarrassed sometimes about what Sally says, and like when she calls Izzy a minority.
That was funny though.
And she also thinks Sally hasn't really. Embrace Sophie's lesbianism.
Yeah, she said that she thinks that Sally is a bit of a bigot, really, but she likes to use it to her advantages in her campaign.
I think Sally really likes Sophie as a celibate lesbian. I don't think she really wants her to be in a relationship. I think she'd prefer it
She likes going out to drinks with Kate. I mean, she was doing that
bit of
engineering, wasn't she?
I think she did that because of Kate's connection to this factory.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. If you're going to sleep with anyone, Sophie, then no homelesses this time, please.
Yeah,
make it somebody who's...
No minorities.
Yeah. So we've also got... I'll just finish off the news this week. There's a few ex-Corey cast members being lined up for some new acting jobs. Gemma, have you ever watched Are You Being Served?
Of course I have. Everyone has.
I haven't.
You're wrong.
Well, you could tell
Are
our
You
listener.
Being Served is like of one of the cornerstones of British comedy of that era.
I don't like things from that era. That's like the 70s, isn't it?
I don't really 60s, 70s. I don't.
It's a sitcom set in a shop, isn't it? Like a department store.
It's a department store, and there's Mrs. Slocum, and Mrs. Slocum's pussy.
Well, Sherry Hewson is being lined up to be Mrs. Slocum, who used to play Maureen Holdsworth in Coronation Street. What kind of character is that then? Is she like a bit of a prissy?
Oh, she's like she's got big pearls and big hair, and she's like, ew, Mrs. Slocum.
I think
like
I can kind of imagine what she looks like. I think I can visualise her.
It was the 70s to the 80s. It was on.
Okay, so Roy Barraclough, who used to play Alec Gilroy, is also going to be in it playing Mr. Granger. Was he in it before?
Yes, Mr. Granger.
I don't even know. All I know from the Are You Being Served is that I'm free.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's him that says that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I've forgotten. You know, I'm not very good with names, but
Okay. Would you be interested in watching it?
Yeah, well, because they remade Dad's Army as well, didn't they?
They have, yeah. That's
because we were talking on the show before about how Sally had to do a very famous line from Dad's
Army.
Yeah,
don't tell him Pike.
And they've made that into a film, and apparently everyone thinks it's really good. So maybe this is the new. This, instead of Hollywood rehashing things and making new Spider-Man and Superman movies all the time, it's going to be the BBC and ITV making old TV shows.
Yeah, well,
this is just going to be
a one-off. Although they said it could spin into a reboot for the show if it's successful.
It's saucy British humour in the vein of Carry On.
I can imagine. I can imagine it being on like a bank holiday or an Easter or something
Christmas.
Like that. Yeah, as a one-off special. So that should be good if you like those actors or that program. And also, Charlie Lawson is going to be in a new TV series as well. He played Jim McDonald, so he did, and he's going to be a doctor in a series called My Mother and Other Strangers, which is, and I quote, a World War II drama which follows the fortunes of the Coyne family and their neighbours as they struggle to maintain normal life following the arrival of 4,000 United States Army Air Force servicemen and women in their rural parish in 1943.
Oh,
now,
dear.
Oh, I know. That
they come over here and they steal our girlfriends.
If I had to watch either of those two programmes, it would definitely be the Are You Being Served. But it is nice to see Charlie getting a bit more acting job, because I don't know whether he's done that much at all recently, as I haven't seen.
I've always said that the one thing I want there to be more of on TV is period dramas, especially World War II ones or World War One.
You haven't ever said that.
I love watching people struggle through World War scenarios. It's one of my favourite things.
Well, this sounds like it'd be right up your street then, Gemma. Anyway, that's it for the news this week. Nothing else to talk about, I think, so we'll move on and finish off the episode with some feedback.
Feedback time. Christina has sent us a message and she said, I've just finished listening to this week's podcast. When you've been asking for an iTunes review, I've been sat thinking, I did that ages ago. I even remember what some of my reviews said. It was only when you said today that you hadn't had a review for 3 years that I'm now aware that my review mustn't be there. I was wondering if this has happened to anybody else. I will get onto it right away.
Thank you.
Well,
we need to check.
This is a conspiracy now, because I think they're trying to push us down, those iTunes people. They're in cahoots with ITV because they don't like criticism.
Constructive criticism, remember? Yeah, I think we've had like hundreds of reviews.
I don't think it's really constructive to say someone's got squinty eyes. Right, Christina continues.
You could do something about that.
Christina says, This past week, I really enjoyed watching Anna lose it. The problem is that she is showing herself to be unhinged, and you might think that she would get clever about it and get him to show his true colours. Yeah, he'd think that, wouldn't you? But no. I am hating the Carla and Tracy feud, and I cannot wait for it to reach its conclusion. I cannot grasp why nobody mentioned anything to Robert about it. If I was Carla, I would have gone straight to Robert and told him about Tracy. I know that Carla and Robert can't stand the sight of each other, but I really think that Robert could put an end to it. Is Tracy going to punish Robert, or is she going to get away with it?
Yeah, why hasn't Carla said anything to Robert? That is a good point. It's not like they're not at all on speaking terms or anything at the moment.
Don't know.
Because
what's he going to do about it? All this is happening to his benefit.
Yeah, he's coming out smelling the roses on this, isn't
well,
he?
Well, he's getting what he wants because he slept with Carla,
so
inadvertently.
If Carla said it to... The thing is, if Carla had said it to Robert and he Well, would he be able to put an end to it? Because Carla's just desperate that nobody finds out about her.
Well, what's Robert going to say? Oh no, Tracy's scheming to get me the bistro. Oh no, that's awful. Let me help you. I'll be like, haha, you silly slag. You slept with me and now I'm getting a bistro because of your stupid mistake.
Yeah, no, you're right. He probably wouldn't.
And Tracy knows about it, and she doesn't care. She wants to keep Robert and punish Carla.
Do you think he would be that bothered or even surprised by the fact that Tracy actually is a nasty blackmailer?
No, he'd in the past he's acted like he can't cope when she does things like that, but now he slept with Carla and showed himself to be a wrong one as well, so
I can just imagine in the future, if he does end up with a bistro, and I still think Nick will, that Robert will end up splitting up with Tracy, and then she'll fall flat on her face and she won't have anything. Or she'll just have the shop, won't she? The flower shop.
Right. And Christina carries on. Where did Alia suddenly appear from? She upped and left without any notice to go and stay with a friend from uni after all that Jason Gary business, and appears back as if she'd never been gone. How can she still have a job at the factory? There's more management in that factory than there are workers. I'm in agreement that although the storyline's okay at the moment, they could be so much better. I was wondering if it could be anything to do with the transition between producers. Maybe Stuart Blackburn doesn't want to start any major storylines close to when Kate Oates takes over. I cannot wait for Kate to take over. Any idea where we will see her work on screen?
I think that she's supposed to be starting in April or so, but that means that her episodes won't start showing until maybe early summer. So I reckon that if I was going to put a date on it, I would say that Stuart Blackburn's reign of terror will end on the Britain's Got Talent week, and then Kate's stuff will take over after that. He could be onto something. That's why he's rehashing things. He doesn't want to start anything bigger, possibly.
I don't know if they really care about that. I don't think it's be wise for producers to tread softly.
They want there to be a smooth transition, I suppose, don't they?
I know, but they don't want to be like they don't want to get to the stage where it's affecting ratings.
No,
because at the very base level of things, he doesn't want to ruin his legacy by saying, "Oh well, it's good job Stuart Blackburn left," because by the time he left, the ratings had gone down 70%, and as soon as Kay Oates took over, it went up by.
Well, people are already saying that, though, aren't they? So not much you can do.
People always say horrible things on the internet and make everything seem worse than it actually is.
Yeah. Not us, though. We only say nice things.
Well, we don't sit around sort of doom and glooming it and saying things. I mean, at times we've gone, oh, no, they're getting rid of so-and-so a person. I can't believe it. I'm really worried. But we don't sit around saying things like, oh, it's the end of an era. The ratings are falling. The show's going to end.
No, I don't think so. It's all going to carry on.
Right, so we've got one from Rebecca. Are you going to read it, Michael?
No, my voice is going.
Right. Not the best of weeks on the street, says Rebecca. Highlights include Sally buying into streetcars, Anna smashing up Phelan's van, and the whole Sally storyline continues to amuse me. I also enjoyed the Sinead modelling storyline and hope this is the start of better things for her. I also enjoyed the character profile on Sinead, and I agree, I like the character, but if a producer comes along that doesn't like a certain character, she could be axed. And I don't have a character of the week this week, as no one stood out for me. Hopefully, this week will be different, and I will have a few characters to choose from. I don't know, Rebecca, I think you might be stuck again. Because I was.
You were, that's what you're going with feeling.
Right, Stephanie, she sent us a message and said, is it just me, or is Izzy's acting some of the worst I've seen on the street in a long time? I like the fact the writers are exploring medical weed. It's legal here in Canada for medicinal use, and will likely be legal within the year for recreational use. I like the storyline, but Izzy's acting is a little over the top. Maybe that is why, I agree with you, Stephanie, maybe that's why I have no sympathy for her, because she's hamming it up, something chronic.
Yeah, but it makes me wonder how much of a problem that Sherilee has with the pain herself. And is there
sure it's a deeply personal storyline, which is why I'm completely avoiding saying anything negative about it, because it's, you know, she's trying here to portray something that is important to her, and I'm sure she'd be devastated if she listened to me going, oh, what a baby. Because I don't know what it's like to live with pain every day. It must be awful. It's the absolute worst thing. And if I could wave a magic wand and get rid of all these chronic illnesses that people have to live with silent pain and not, you know, like, not looking ill and trying to have a stiff upper lip but having to cope with it every day, day in, day out, with no relief in sight. I don't know how I cope with it.
No, I know what you mean. I hope that after when this all kind of finishes, they give Izzy a storyline which is kind of where she can be a bit more empowered to do something, just to balance it out.
I know, I guess so. But, you know, in the reality of the situation is, in not just this storyline, but lots of other storylines, they kind of wrap it all up in a neat bow and move on. But in reality, the characters will still be struggling with these with these issues for the rest of their lives, like Peter and his alcoholism, and even something silly like Tracy and her kidney. And
yeah, maybe that's maybe that's why it seems a bit over the top or whatever at the moment, because she's saying, oh, I've been struggling like this for years and everything, but we've not really seen it, and it's suddenly like she's whinging and moaning out of nowhere, as if, oh, come on, it can't be that bad, you've not moaned about it before. But that's just because they haven't focused on that before. Maybe it has been a
I know, but also you could argue you don't really want to have the only character in a wheelchair on the show every single time she's in a scene going, oh, I'm always in pain. Always in pain. You guys are lucky, you should feel, you know.
Yeah, she usually gets on with
I thought it was completely within her character, and made sense to me when she said to Gary, oh, it gets worse every year, and I don't make a fuss about it because I want to get on, and I want to prove everyone wrong and have my kids and have a normal life. But at the end of the day, I don't have a normal life because I've got this horrible condition.
Yeah, I'm glad that they put those lines in, because that kind of made me feel
100% sympathetic to somebody.
Yeah.
If you want me on your side to feel sorry for you and sympathise with you and stuff, say something like that. Don't go crying to me about in whinging.
So next time when I get my sore throat, I go, Gemma, I just want to have a normal life. I just want to record a podcast and have people listen to me. Is that too much to ask? I want to teach my children and have them not misunderstand what they tell me. And then I'll get sympathy.
Yes.
Oh, I'll try that. Okay. We'll do that after we've recorded.
Okay.
Finish off right, with Amy's
finally,
message.
Amy said, I've just listened to your 100th podcast.
Hooray.
I've only got another 40 more before I'm caught up. I really enjoyed it, and to my delight and surprise, I would have won the quiz you had, due to this podcast and the character profiles. I am really looking forward to your 200th podcast.
Oh, blimey.
When's that?
11 episodes time.
Is it really? Yeah. Oh, my God.
I know.
Actually, you know, 11 episodes is like 2 months.
And you're right. Yeah, 2 or 3 months away, and then we'll... it's coming up. I don't know what we're going to do for that. Maybe we do another live one like we did for the...
We need some kind of party balloons and...
We can muster up some party balloons.
We should get some helium balloons and...
We should.
Go, hello, record to girl, this is
great. Well, yeah, I think
no,
we should
you shouldn't do that. It's dangerous.
I think we should do something like that.
It's dangerous.
That quiz that Amy is talking about, I remember that. It was a bit hard, wasn't it?
It was awful.
I thought it was fine, but maybe the questions were a bit too difficult on there. But I'm glad that Amy did well with it.
Yay,
well, thanks to
well
us.
Done, Amy.
Hooray. And that is it for another week.
If you'd like to brag about how great you are at Coronation Street Trivia, thanks to us, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com. And you can find us at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Review us on iTunes. Maybe you thought you did, but you haven't done it. Go back and have a look. Skype us, Conversation Street, Twitter, @conversationstir, Facebook, Conversation Street. We don't have a Patreon. We don't have a PayPal address that we can beg you for money for.
No.
So don't worry about that. Just send us an email and that will make us happy.
It does. It gets me so happy when we have new messages dinging. Right. That is it.
That's another
week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for putting up with my gruffly voice. I'm just whining for a little bit more.
I've got a cut on my tongue. So if I sounded like I couldn't speak properly, I've got a sore throat and a cut on my tongue. So I'm very sorry. I sound like an idiot. I can hear it in my voice.
No, you're fine.
I hope nobody started with this episode, because they're not going to listen to the next one.
They'd be confused about that intro we had, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Right, see you next time, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye.
The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com. And welcome to episode 188, where we'll be discussing one of the BAFTA... Oh, bum.
The bum worthy.